On this episode of Know How, Brian's going to show you some Linux magic, then I'm going to make these LEDs dance. Dance, monkey boy, dance.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know How is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Know How is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly rate. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/knowhow. That's LYNDA.com/knowhow. Welcome to Know How. It's the show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next half hour, we're going to take you through some geeky projects that give you the knowledge to break down your old geek imagination. Brian, how you feeling today?
I'm feeling all right. Just got back from a trip to L.A., so that was fun.
Yeah, I noticed. Disneyland, happiest place on earth?
It was.
Yeah. Hopefully it refreshed you. You're ready to go. You've got some imagination about the projects that we're going to build to give to the good folks at home.
Absolutely not. But okay. We're going to do it anyway.
We're going to do it anyway. It's fantastic. Now, I thought that we should probably start with this little story that we picked up from PC Pro. Mm-hmm. Now, remember last week we talked about DNS.
Right.
And and we talked about the different ways to adjust your DNS settings in order to make it more secure, make it faster.
On your machine, right?
Right. Either on your machine, in your router, or in the host file.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we've got the story from PC Pro talking about how somebody, I won't say who, but somebody compromised 300,000 Soho, that's small office, home office routers, to change their DNS entries. Now, Brian, do you remember what DNS servers do?
I'm pretty sure you did a show about it, but I hardly ever listen to what you say, so...
Wow, that hurts me.
No, I'm sorry. So basically, it's you send a request to the DNS server with an IP address, and it sends you to where it's supposed to?
Well, yeah, that's reverse it's reverse DNS, but yeah. So, yeah, you're on the right track. DNS, you give it an address, like google.com, right?
Right.
And it gives you the actual number that server lives at. Because your computer can't do anything with google.com until it has the directions to the server. The DNS server resolves it and gives you the number that your computer needs to get to the server that you're trying to get to.
So I think I remember you said something about if I go into terminal or any other command line, I guess on Windows or something like that, and I type in ping space google.com, that should give me their IP address, right?
Right, exactly. So ping is a program that's built into pretty much every operating system, Windows, Linux, Mac, OS X, whatever it's going to be, that lets you send out a very small packet of information to a specific IP address and say, hey, are you responding? Are you alive? Are you there? But what we see with this attack is they were able to redirect that traffic. So let's say Google is at 74.x.x.x.
Right.
Because they were able to compromise these 300,000 Soho routers, they were able to send back a resolution for google.com of, say, 24.x.x.x, mm-hmm. which was their own server. They would mimic what Google looked like. They would even mimic the services of Google. But then you started putting in your own information, and they could scrape it off the top.
Okay, so, that's not good.
That's not great. Now, what they probably did was they ran a semi-legit DNS server. So most of the requests they would actually send off their merry way off to the real server. But the few servers that they were targeting, like the ones that had your financial information or your login information, they would intercept and essentially run a man-in-the-middle attack to try to get your personal information. Very nasty, very horrible, and we don't exactly know how long it was running.
Wow.
Now, here's the good thing. The DNS episode that we showed you, two out of the three ways that I showed you to speed up your DNS could have defeated this attack.
Right. So if you bypass, you would bypass it if you changed the DNS on your host machine, right?
Right. Exactly.
Even if your router had been compromised.
Even if your router had been compromised. So I showed three different ways to speed up your DNS. The first way was to change the DNS settings on your laptop. The second one was to change the DNS settings in your router, which would then push it out to all the clients on your network. And the third way was to set up a host file. That was the hard-coded file that resolved names to numbers.
Okay.
So if they had attacked me and I had run either that first one or that last one, it wouldn't have affected me at all.
Hmm. Well, yeah, that's a good reason to do it then.
Yeah. It's so not just speed, but security. Now, speaking of security, Brian, you're going to give us a way to, how do we say, lead a more Linux life.
Yeah, well, if you're like me, you have a bunch of USB sticks laying around, and I do like to tinker with a lot of things. For you example, like you use Windows, I use Mac, but I also have a PC at home and I use an Android phone. But you know, I haven't been playing with Ubuntu in a while, and I wanted to put it on a USB stick and then carry it around with me. And it's basically a persistent OS, so you can save your files to it, have like your toolbars, bookmarks, things like that, all saved on USB, and just carry it with you where you want and mess around with Linux. So it's a pretty easy way to play with it.
Well, it sounds to me as if there's two big benefits here. The first is, as you mentioned, to have your desktop, your stuff in the right place. You just plug it in and you go. Mm-hmm. But I think this is also a really good solution for people who just want to dip their toe into Linux.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe not completely zap your system. Drop it onto a removable piece of media so that you could plug it in, play, and see if you could learn it more quickly than if you were just immersed into it.
Exactly. And you don't need a really big flash drive or anything. Recommended is 4 gigabytes or bigger. I'm using an 8 gigabyte flash drive, but you could use something, depending on the Linux distro you're using, you could do Puppy Linux, and you could use something like a 2 gigabyte
Puppy
or
Linux
less.
Is adorable. Yeah, Puppy Linux.
I think it takes up like 500 megabytes or even, I think, less than that.
Now, we do have to say off the bat that, yeah, you could get really, really small distros, but the way that they get small is they strip off all the services.
Right.
Most of the time, that's a good thing. Like when you want something to load on a Raspberry Pi, you can't have too many services attached because it's going to slow it down to an unacceptable level.
Right.
But know that the smaller the distro gets, generally the less bells and whistles it's going to have.
Right.
So when you get Puppy Linux,
it's pretty bare bones.
Yeah. Ubuntu is nice because it's easy to use, it's got some eye candy, and it's not that big.
Right. And one of the added benefits, because it is a little bit more difficult for Mac users to do this, but I found a really simple program called Mac Linux USB Loader made by 7Bits. And it's a pretty trick little piece of software that allows you to quickly make the USB bootable. And you can even go through their menu system to download the distro. So here we have my laptop screen, and I've already gone ahead and downloaded the Mac Linux USB Loader. Up here in the right-hand corner. If I open that up, it will be approached by this menu system. And so for time basis, I've already downloaded the distribution that I wanted, which was Ubuntu 13.10 for Mac. If you download it this way, it takes a little bit longer. If you prefer to torrent your ISOs, then make sure if you're doing this on a Mac that it has the plus Mac at the end of it, because otherwise it will not work with your hardware. And I should also mention, this is for Macs that are running Intel processors.
Right, right.
So anyway, I've already gone ahead and I've downloaded the Ubuntu 13.10 desktop, and there you can see the little plus Mac on the ISO. Go to Create. The USB. You want to format your USB drive first because you need to put it into FAT32 at the very least. So right here we would go into Disk Utility on your Mac, select the drive, erase, and you want to make sure that you have MS-DOS FAT selected so that your Linux drive is readable. So once you've formatted your drive, then you go into Mac Linux USB Loader. Install it to your drive by creating a live USB, and it will pop up with a progress bar showing that your bootable drive is being created. Now, once you've done all that, The next easy step is just to restart your Mac.
Typically, how long does it take to create a live image on a drive?
It's pretty short. It took about 15 minutes and I'm running a 2011 MacBook Air right now.
Right. Are there any things that someone should know if they're creating this live image on a USB drive? And, like, you've got a relatively okay MacBook. What happens if they're running older hardware? Are there any hardware hits, hardware tips they're going to need?
Well, if you're running older hardware, it shouldn't be too much of an issue. The Mac, the software for making this USB is pretty universal.
Right.
And Linux isn't very, you don't have to have crazy hardware.
That's actually one of the nice things about Linux, right? You could run it on older hardware and give it life again because Linux is not as hardware dependent.
Right, which, yeah, is part of the reason it's fun to do this project. So what you're going to need to do after you've created your USB bootable Linux drive is reboot your Mac, hold down the Alt and Option key, and that'll bring up the different options for selecting which drive you want to boot off of. And if you've used Bootcamp, it's pretty much the same thing. And then I will load that up. It'll take a second. Shouldn't take too long. It takes my Mac with this SSD not very long, about 15 seconds here to load up.
Yeah. We've got people in the chat room who are saying, wait a minute, okay, so that was for a Mac. What about a PC? Well, that's actually really simple.
Yeah.
The process is the same if it's going to be Mac or for PC. This particular one was designed for a MacBook, but you can download these images for PC. It's follow the same procedure, and you'll get a drive that's formatted for PC, readable by PC, and bootable by PC.
Well, see, so this is exciting for me because for a long time it was hard to get something like this to work on a Mac.
Right.
PC is pretty easy. I'll have links to how you can do it on a PC, but if you just do a simple Google search, there's a lot of information out there for that. This is more of a thing that is...
Yeah, it's a general knowledge, general information.
General knowledge. Yeah. So, I'm all booted up in Ubuntu now.
It's pretty.
Yeah, and it works great. Like, everything loads fast. It pulls, like, all the drivers work fine and stuff. I'm not connected to the internet right now, so that's why that's showing that. But it runs just like if I had it installed on the computer.
Now, let me ask you this, because I'm a Linux guy from way back, and I remember trying to install the first distro and just being frustrated out of my mind that the drivers just weren't there.
Right.
I mean, you got really bad video.
And you had to set your video, your resolution file and stuff.
We're past those days, right? Most of the popular distributions of Linux have really good driver support. They can support the higher-end hardware, and they can actually give you decent performance.
Right. And it's come a long way. It works on a lot of machines, like I said, with Intel processors and stuff. And, can't read your name right now, but he points out it's a difficult with the support for the BIOS. It's the use of an EFI, the firmware.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is a nice little trick for people who want to play with Linux, who maybe don't want to make that commitment to wipe out their current operating system. And if you've got the chance and you've got a free USB drive, why the heck not?
Yeah.
Brian, thank you.
Sure.
Awesomeness. Cool. Now, you talked about Linux. And we've been doing a lot of projects using the Raspberry Pi, and there have been people who have been saying, wait a minute, where can I learn more about this Raspberry Pi? In fact, we got a really good comment in our Google Plus pages talking about how they were a little concerned we kind of glossed over some of the commands. We do that a lot, right? Because we don't necessarily explain exactly how you use chown in all of its permutations.
Right.
We don't always explain what sudo means or why we use nano as our editor. Well, the reason why we don't do that is because it's going to take too much time for us to explain all those little bits and pieces.
Right.
Yeah, our episodes would be like 12 hours long if we decided to give everyone all the information leading up to the installation of Pi.
And if only we started on time every day, maybe we would be able to.
Yeah, maybe we would. But I've got a better solution.
What's that?
How about this? Why not come to us for general information about projects and go to lynda.com to find out the specifics, to learn up on everything you've ever wanted to know about Linux, Linux drivers, Linux software, or even developing for Linux itself. Now, lynda.com is a premier provider of online education. I mean, what do you want to learn, Brian? You want to learn photography, audio and video editing, maybe software skills? Well, with easy-to-follow video tutorials on lynda.com, you can learn at your own pace, on your own terms, from top industry experts. With a Lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to thousands of online video courses that cover a variety of software, creative, and business skills. Now, Brian, here we've got Linux. Lynda.com is all about the Linux. They'll teach you how to install PHP and MySQL on your Raspberry Pi. They'll teach you how to develop Python for Linux devices. They are all about giving the Linux community the knowledge that they need to develop, to build, to process the information into something that's usable by others. Now, with Lynda.com, you can improve your skills, learn new software, and keep up to date with technology. They have over 2,000 courses with new courses added daily, including the new courses this week, Final Cut Pro 10.1.1, Essential Training, Web Design Fundamentals, Up and Running with Chrome OS, GarageBand Essential Training, and Making Beats in Logic Pro 10. That, seriously, that was my stuff. Yeah, I got that.
Hopefully they have a tutorial on how to beatbox.
Absolutely. I think they do. Now, Lynda's instructors are working professionals at the top of their fields and expert teachers. They make high-quality video productions from state-of-the-art studios. These aren't the homemade videos that you'll find on YouTube. Now, we always get people who say, wait a minute, why are you bashing people on YouTube? We're not. People on YouTube are fantastic. We're on YouTube. We try to teach people what they want to learn. But with Lynda.com, you get a little bit better. Better production values, better audio, better video, all with Lynda.com. Now, you get curated course content. Each Lynda.com course is carefully structured so that users can learn from start to finish or jump to a specific chapter for quick answers. You get easy-to-follow videos that can help you find the answers that you need and searchable transcripts. I love this. Searchable transcripts from the dialogue within a video that lets you search inside that video to save time and find exactly what you're looking for. Lynda offers courses for all experience levels that cover a wide range of technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies, and more. They also let you watch from your computer, tablet, or mobile device, and you can switch and pack up. You can start on your laptop and move to your tablet, move from your tablet to your mobile phone, from your mobile phone back to your PC. It's all part of your Lynda.com package. Now, here's what we want you to do. We want you to try Lynda.com. Learn something new in 2014 with Lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire Lynda.com course library. Or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's projects using the exact same assets. And you can try Lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. It's all at lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank Lynda for their support of KnowHow. Now, Brian, how about some dancing LED lights?
Sure. You got something in mind?
I do. But first, let's break down some of the basic tech that's going to make this little project possible.
Okay.
What do you know about LEDs?
Well, I know they don't take a lot of energy to use.
Yeah, they're very efficient.
And they're very bright for how tiny they are.
Yep.
So, what did you do to make it cooler than just LEDs as they are?
Well, these are LEDs in strips. So, LED stands for light emitting diode. Okay. It's a diode, which is an electronic component. And like any diode, it's going to have a few interesting pieces of performance tech that's built into it. The first thing is, diodes only work in one direction. It's not like an incandescent light where you could run power through either side and it's gonna light up.
Okay.
A diode will only work when you've got power applied to the positive and negative side as designed.
Okay.
So that's one thing. Actually, I've used LEDs in the past to prevent current from reversing. So if you don't want the current to go backwards, you drop a diode in there and it keeps it from going the other way around.
Okay.
It's kind of cool.
And these LEDs you have right here, these are just single color?
Yeah, these are all blue. Now, if you go to the project site, you'll see that these have been wrapped in this little spool. What I like about this, these are called SMDs, surface mount, and these are a strip of about 300 LEDs. Again, very, very low power, incredibly bright for what they are, and incredibly inexpensive. This entire roll of 300 LEDs, I believe, costs about $8 from Amazon.com, And if you have Prime, free 2-day delivery.
Right.
Now,
right.
The nice thing about this is you could take this, which also has an adhesive backing, and stick it to anything, right? Which becomes a really cool way to do projects. Let me show you one of the really cool things about this. We're going to light this up right now. We've got a 12-volt battery on this table. And if I do this, it shows you, even in the roll, these things are pretty darn bright.
Yeah.
And again, let me demonstrate that other principle. And that is, if I take this and I reverse the current, you can see nothing happens.
All right.
So it's not going to light up. It's not going to give me a weird color. It's not going to smoke. It just won't allow current through. Go back to the proper way to light it, and I'm back to my super bright LEDs.
Nice, yeah.
Now, we have a lot of applications for this project, but I thought maybe we could combine it with another component that I wanted to play with.
Yeah, why stop there?
Yeah, go ahead and bring the lights back up, and you can see this in the product shot. This...
That is tiny.
This is tiny. This is a TIP31C transistor.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, a transistor is a semiconductor. Hey, why don't you... Here, yeah. Here, hold that in that product cam for Alex. Let me drag it. Yeah. That's all it looks like. And actually, transistors are a lot smaller than this. The only reason why it's this size is because it's more difficult to work with it the smaller they get it. Now, remember, when I was growing up, this was the size of transistors. But now we could pack trillions of them into a piece of silicon the size of your thumbnail.
They had transistors when you were a kid?
Wow. Okay. How dare you? How dare you? Now, let's talk a little bit about transistors.
Okay.
They're semiconductors, which, as the name might lend, sometimes conduct and sometimes don't. And that's what all of computers are built on, the fact that we could have devices that sometimes will conduct a charge and sometimes will not.
Right.
But here's the key. Why does it sometimes conduct and why does it not? That's the secret of the TIP31C transistor. Let's go to the board so you can see really quickly the kind of circuit that we're going to draw up. So this is very crudely our TIP.
We didn't have Greg here.
I'm sorry. This is our TIP31C transistor. It's got our three pins, pin 1, pin 2, pin 3.
Okay.
Now, the way it's going to work is there is a current flowing between pin 1 and pin 3, and that's the current coming from this. It could be anything generating a low voltage. In this case, it's a sound device, like a media player.
Oh, okay.
Right? So our media player has a current that's going between pin 1 and pin 3, right?
Right.
The way a transistor will work is every time there's enough charge to move between pin 1 and pin 3, it's also going to move a charge between pin 2 and pin 3.
Which is connected to the LED.
Which is connected to the LED and the battery.
Right, okay.
All right, so if you really want to look this up, go to Wikipedia, look for an NPN transistor. It'll give you all the technical details. But the long and short of it is that this allows us to take something with a very, very low voltage. So this is a sound source is like 1 to 2 volts, something like 20 milliamps,
okay. Which
is not enough to run anything. And bring it all the way to this, which is a 12-volt battery. This particular transistor can support 100 volts, 40 watts. So I can trigger 100 volts, 40 watts with something that's 1 volt, 20 milliamps.
Okay. So what's your end game here, Padre?
My end game is to make the LEDs dance.
Dance?
Alex, run it. Before we get started, let's make sure that you have everything that you're going to need. You need a power source, 12 volts. I'm using this battery here, but you could use an AC to DC transformer. You're also going to need a few tools, things like snips and wire strips and needle nose pliers, scissors, and of course, a soldering iron. I also suggest that you have some sort of helping hand assembly, something like this that will hold things when you need to solder them, because when we start working with the transistors, it's going to get frustrating because you don't have 3 or 4 hands. You're also going to want a length of heat shrink tubing and some sort of heat source to be able to shrink it down so we can prevent shorts. Finally, you're going to need the strips. That's right. You're going to need the LED strips, and along with them, you're going to need some sort of 3.5 connector to connect it to your audio system. The last piece are these, the magical transistors, the TIP31Cs, which are going to allow us to convert our audio into video motion. Now, you're going to need 2 pairs of wires to connect from the audio source into the TIP31C resistors. You're also going to need to have leads on each of your LED strips. That's a positive and a negative for each, plus one more lead per TIP31 transistor to get back to the negative terminal on your battery. Now, make sure that you tin them. Now, the reason why we tin our wires is because we want to have a solid connection to whatever we're soldering them to, especially if you're using stranded connectors. Now, disclaimer, my soldering skills are horrible and it's late at night, so I'm not thinking all that straight. Whenever you're soldering, you always want to make sure that you apply heat to the component or to the wire, not to the solder. That's because you don't want the solder to be cold, quote-unquote, when it hits the wire or the component. What you'll get is you'll get a blob of solder, but no real connectivity. Now that we're done tinning our wires, we need to connect them to the audio jack. That's the 3.5mm audio jack. Now, hopefully you can buy something like I've got here, which is a 3.5mm jack with an unscrewable boot. What you're looking for is something that's very easy to solder in, something with these clamping down tines so that it makes the cable stay. Go ahead and solder your wires to the connectors on the jack. You want two common wires to go to the large plug. That's the one that goes all the way back from the tip of the connector. That's your ground. That's the negative. You also want one wire each. I'm using red and black. That's the typical positive and negative to touch the left and the right output. The reason why we want to do this is because we want stereo output. We want to be able to control two TIP31 transistors, one for the left channel, one for the right channel. Now, it really doesn't matter which one is which, so don't get all a tizzy if you can't remember which one's left, which one's right. We can sort that out later. One thing that I like to do is I like to put heat shrink tubing to make sure that I'm not going to short out, especially if I know my solder joints aren't going to be great. Here's a pro tip. Make sure that the heat shrink tubing is on the wiring before you start soldering. Otherwise, you're going to have to cut it loose and start all over. Once you're done with the soldering, go ahead and put the boot back on and any strain relief that might be part of the plug and screw it back in. It's time for the transistors. Now remember, I've got two of these because I want one for each channel. One thing to remember is that there's a front and a back. The back is going to be the part with the metal. An easier way to remember it is they're shaped a little bit like an L. Well, the back of the L is the back of the transistor. So looking at the front of the transistor from left to right, we've got pins 1 through 3. Pin 1 is going to be the positive from your audio connection. The middle pin, pin number 2, is going to be the negative that leads out into my LED array. And pin 3 is the common ground. That's going to connect both to the negative terminal of the battery and also to the negative of my audio source. Go ahead and tin your connections and then connect your wiring, your newfound wiring, to your TIP31C transistor. The next step is to solder the negative terminal of your LED strip to pin number 2. That's the pin that's going to trigger this LED strip when there's sound coming through the transistor. Now you're going to need a short length of cable that's going to connect it to the battery terminal. Go ahead and snip, tin, and then connect that to pin 3. That's the common ground of the TIP31C resistor. Once you're done, go ahead and shrink the heat shrink tubing to protect those connectors, and then repeat the process for the other channel. You should now have an assembly that looks a little something like this. Two LED strips connected to their respective channels. Now, you want to combine the negative and the positive terminals into a single bundle. The reason for this is because the switching is actually going to take place in the transistors, so I just need to worry about getting positive to positive and negative to negative from my power source. All that's left now is to connect this to my audio source and then use some alligator clips to connect the positive and the negative to the positive and negative terminals of my battery. Once I've done that, now, Brian, what I like about this project is that we can continue to elaborate. So what we've given them right now is we've given them the basic structure to create something like this, right? Transistors and some LEDs and a battery.
Right, right.
Yeah. But what we want to do in the future is we're going to take this stuff, we're going to put it into some sort of enclosure, maybe add a diffuser and I'm thinking maybe we could use some of those color-changing LED strips to make it work a little bit better. What do you think?
That would be cool. Yeah. Hey, we're already so cool with these LEDs. I'm not sure if we should do that.
I know, but that might be beyond the legal level of coolness
awesomeness?
Allowed.
Yeah, weird.
Go figure. Now, something else that I want to do with these transistors is I really want to start using them in all of our Raspi projects. There are some people in the chat room who are saying, oh, well, it's just like a relay. Well, no, it's not. You see, a relay can always only be on or off. As you can see from these LED lights, they have levels. This is an analog circuit, so it will surge up and down based on how much voltage is coming through. A relay would only be on or off. This gives you much better gradation when you're trying to do a project that's artistic, that maybe you're trying to play with lights, that maybe you're trying to play with mood.
Right, totally.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing what we can do with this is we hook it up to, say, the 3-volt or 5-volt output on a Raspberry Pi, which we can control, which means we could use a Raspberry Pi with one of these larger transistors to trigger something like a 120-volt AC device.
Oh.
Which then becomes home automation, right?
Well, there we go. Yeah, like that idea.
Yeah. But until that time, I think it's maybe time for us to tell the good folks at home where they could find all the notes about these projects. Now, people, we know that we went through a lot of this stuff really, really quickly, especially with the Linux boot drive, especially with a lot of the electronics and the theory that runs behind building something like transistor-powered LEDs. So we put everything in our show notes. Right, Brian?
That's right. And you can find those awesome show notes at twit.tv/KH. And you can also find past episodes and further show notes for those, too, which I highly recommend you go through.
Yeah, no, seriously. If you get lost at any time during the show notes will give you the step-by-step. Just follow that, and it will let you get to the finished project, and then you could go back and research the pieces that you don't understand. It's part of the way that we learn. Speaking of the way that we learn, if you have any questions about this show, you could write us at knowhow@twit.tv, which we will promptly never check because we don't do
email. Do we have passwords for that?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's just straight into the spam filter, really. But if you really want to contact us, what you want to do is you want to jump into our G+ page, right, Brian?
That's right. I think we've hit 6,000 followers now, and if you post a question in there, we're more than likely to see it, and someone else is probably going to answer it for you.
There's some smart people in there. They're really good people. And you know what? At the beginning, it used to be just the hosts and maybe the producer who would get in there and answer questions. I jump in every once in a while, and the people who live in that community are really good about answering any question. Ask them anything. They'll either give you a reference to an episode of Know How that already covered that, or they'll point you off in a direction that can help you solve your problem.
Right. And really, if you have ideas for a show that you want to see, just let us know, and that's where to do it.
And remember, we do a feedback once a month, so that if you have a project that you're really proud of, please
show it off.
Show
we
it
want
off.
To see it.
Put it in that group. Be part of the Know It All community. Also, if you don't like G+, you could also find us on other forms of social media. I'm personally on Twitter. You can find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. That's @PadreSJ.
And I am Brian Burnett, and mine is @Cranky_Hippo.
Yeah. We've also got one more member of this crew. We'd like to welcome him because I believe he's been permanently assigned to Know How. You may know him as the Flowmaster Mixer, Alex Gumpel. Let's see if he'll throw a camera onto himself. Alex,
you were going to regret this.
I'm sure we're going to regret it, but you know what? I think 3 is a good number.
Yeah, no, I like having Alex on it. He's definitely way better at it than I am, so I'm glad to be over here instead of over there now.
You know what, Brian? For once, we agree on something.
Thanks, Padre. Yeah.
Until next time, now that you know,
go do it.
Put that fire out.
Where's that fire?